Last month turned out to be one of the saddest in respect of the organ world, with the passing of two giants of music. This special programme looks back at the lives of both Brian Sharp and Alan Haven. Called Image. Its release as the A-side of a 1965 Fontana EP quickly propelled Lancashire-born Alan Haven into the recording world spotlight, and organist Mike Hall, one of several personalities that I've invited to contribute to the show this month, has his memories of it too.
There's one that always springs to mind when you mention the name of Alan Haven, and that's Image. And I can remember listening to that particular record when Radio Caroline used to play that. The one that da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. Okay, that's perhaps enough of the vocals from me, but that might just jog some of your listeners' memories into that particular song. I think the first time I saw Alan Haven live would probably have been around the mid-1970s, maybe 1974. But he certainly left a big impression on me, and I think with just about everybody else in the audience that night. And there was probably a good couple of hundred, if not more, at that particular show, demonstration, concert. Each arrangement that he did was something really special. And not only was the actual playing something out of this world, but the way he threw himself into each number was just something that you had to behold and witness. It was just unbelievable, just incredible. And when I think about albums, well, there's always one that springs to mind, one called Organ Magic. It was just fantastic. And it also featured, I believe, Trumpet, I think, by Maynard Ferguson. It was just a sensational album. And I remember buying that on LP years before CDs were out. Difficult to sum up in just a few words Alan Haven, but an incredible musician, a pioneer in that particular field of electronic organ playing, and indeed will be sadly missed.
One, two, three, played there by Alan Haven, of course, with the Keith Mansfield Orchestra and Maynard Ferguson on trumpet. Organist Keith Beckingham emailed to say, "I first heard Alan playing a Lowry organ when he appeared opposite the John Dankworth Band. I was immediately struck by his distinctive and original style. This man could swing. I met him on several occasions and we appeared together for Technics, demonstrating their new models. He was always chatty and easy to get along with, and he brought a whole new approach to the electronic organ and will be sadly missed." In point of fact, Alan Haven originally set his career sights on being a pianist, but had a change of heart towards the popular Hammond organ of those times, having become hooked on the sounds produced by American organist Jackie Davis. By the time he made his first LP, A Game for Fontana, Alan was playing an old valve-type Lowry Holiday model, and which he used for the Lennon and McCartney styled by Alan Haven LP. Thank you. Day's Night, played there by Alan Haven with the great Tony Crombie on drums. And if you want to see the duo actually doing that number, you can see a very rare Granada telly recording of it on YouTube. From that moment on, he went on to develop not only what is now referred to as the Haven sound, but his own instrument, the Haven organ, of which there are still a few working models in the hands of collectors. His partnership with Tony Crombie saw the duo playing at such prestigious London jazz clubs as Ronnie Scott's and also at the one owned by legendary singer Annie Ross. Organist Brian Hazelby emailed to say, "In the 1960s I had a record of Alan called Live at Annie's Room. He was playing a Lowry Heritage plus a Leslie 147 with Tony Crombie on drums. And this really started me on the road to playing the electronic organ."
Thank you.
from the LP, live at Annie's Room, Alan Haven on organ, and of course Tony Crombie on drums. Organist Howard Beaumont emailed to say, "For me, Alan Haven represented the most original jazz organist this country has ever known. I was privileged to have known him for many years. He always had time for me, talking about different organs, keyboards and recording equipment. When I started out on the road, it was with the Lowry Heritage, which I bought to give me that Haven sound. I'll never forget his kind words of encouragement during my formative years. A one of a kind that'll never be replaced." Around this time, Alan Haven became quite a regular on radio and television shows and suddenly found himself as the winner of the New Star Award section in the Reader's Poll of the Melody Maker publication. He won it a second time in a category called Miscellaneous Instruments, and soon after that, Melody Maker recognised the impact that organs were making and actually created an organ section. These prestigious awards resulted in the duo being asked to play in the United States, where they fulfilled engagements at the Sahara and Thunderbird hotels in Las Vegas. On one of his return journeys from the States, in 1965 to be precise, he met up with the reigning Miss World, Leslie Langley, and they eventually married and had one daughter. In the 90s, having got very tired of all the travelling involved with playing concerts, the couple set up home in Norfolk, where he realised his ambition to equip and set up his own recording studio. He also became a twitcher, a lover of birds of the feathered variety, he once told me, and he went on to hold a position of honorary warden of the Clane Nature Reserve, which was about 3 miles down the road from his home. I like to think that his love of birds was perhaps running around in his mind when he recorded this tune, Poinciana, on the JVC Victron organ. Thank you. Poenciana performed on one of the very rare commercial recordings of the short-lived JVC Victron M1210 model on a CD rightly titled as Collector's Item, copies of which are still available from MSS Studios. The next time I saw Alan was many years later when he was invited to appear at one of the early Pontins organ festivals which were held over in Torremolinos and which was where he was now living and working. Prior to making that decision, a budding vocalist by the name of Karen Ellie had gone to his Norfolk studio in order to make a demo disc. The rest, as they say, is history, because they teamed up and became in regular demand at nightclubs and prestigious sales shows and receptions on the Costa del Sol for quite a number of years. By now, he'd moved on from the standard type of electronic organ to multi-keyboards. Thank you. very beautiful Shenandoah, a track from Alan Haven's CD titled Organ Spectrum, which featured the VersiBeta DX400 and a Yamaha DX7 synth, with some subtle touches there by Karen Ellie, more of whom later. Even in semi-retirement, Alan was always happy to meet up with old friends, and apart from myself, I know of only one other specialist organ music programme presenter that ever approached him for an interview, of which he always gladly gave of his time. That other person was my good friend, Ian Wolstenholme, who recalls the occasion.
Got to admit, the very first time I met Alan Haven was a bizarre incident. We'd arranged to do an interview, actually at his house, and I only had to travel about 10 minutes away from where I lived at the time. And we arranged to meet on the car park of the local McDonald's, just around the corner from where he was living, and we met there, and we went round to his house, and literally the minute that we set foot in his home, he completely changed into one of the most relaxed, nicest human beings that I'd ever met. Yes, we did the interview. It had been planned meticulously, and the obvious questions of what he'd done and who he'd met and what he was going to do were asked, and the whole piece went together, from my point of view, flawlessly. But the creme de la creme, the pièce de la résistance, was when he then took me up to his music room, and we went in, and it was basically a converted bedroom, but it was full of gadgets and keyboards and wires and computers, and he'd actually just completed, or was putting the finishing touches at least, to his Sitting In with the Big Bands album. And he gave me a copy of that, but more memorable than that, he played a few tracks off of the PC and played along with them. It was sheer magic, and it was a moment that will stay with me for a very, very long time. Here was that consummate professional who'd starred on TV and stage over so many years previously, and who I'd only seen on the front covers of LPs and the occasional TV snippet. And here was I, in his house, not far from where I was, listening to the musician at work. And that's my lasting memory. Apart from having a terrifically dry sense of humour, he was one of the most charming and pleasant individuals to actually work with, albeit for 2 or 3 hours on a Saturday afternoon, way back in 2003.
Thank you.
Bolero, Alan Haven there from the CD Sitting In With the Big Bands, and copies of that final recording of Alan's are still available from MSS. Now, I say final recording, and in commercial terms that is correct, but I'm going to end this half of the programme with something very special, and for that I have to thank Karen Ellie and her friend David Harm for sending me some tracks which were the very last private recordings that Alan ever made. The story behind them is quite simple. David loves to write poetry, but Karen saw something else that was special about them and bounced the idea off of Alan that they could in fact be set to music. Initially, there was a little reluctance on Alan's part because he felt that it couldn't be done, but against all his beliefs, he worked with Karen to set all 12 poems to music. The resulting extemporizations are beautiful, as I'm sure you'll agree. This is one of them, reuniting for one last time the combined talents of Karen Ellie and Alan Haven.
Understood. Nerves are shot. Oh, they're weak like old wood. No energy. Feeling so ill. Can't think, I'm losing my skills. I'm tired of so-called friends stabbing me in the back again and again. I can't feel. I'm in a daze. Tell me this can be real.
Yeah.
misunderstood. Nerves are shot. Oh, they're weak like old wood. I'm hoping and dreaming. I'm begging, I'm pleading. Please take this feeling away.
And Alan Haven working their vocal and keyboard magic on the words of a poem which their friend David Harm titled I'm Tired. My sincere thanks to them for allowing what is undeniably a very private recording to be shared with listeners to Organ First Radio. What are my memories of Alan Haven? Well, I can best sum that up by saying he accepted me as a long-distance friend with whom he could talk over musical projects and reminisce about the good old days. I had no idea at the time, back in 2014, when I first began to produce a video centred around his life, that 12 months later it would turn out to be a tribute. Naturally, in this segment of the show, I've been unable to tell more of that story, but you can see it all by going to YouTube and typing in just four words, they being Alan Haven, an image. As indicated at the head of this month's show, January turned out to be the saddest of months in organ world circles because a few days later, another of our greatest artists, Brian Sharp, also died of cancer. Once again, I asked my broadcasting colleague Ian Wolstenholme for his memories of the man that everyone, with deep affection I might add, called Sharpie.
I think it was one of the early Pontins Organ Festivals that I first met Brian Sharp. Backstage, he'd just come off playing a concert, and I was leaning on a grand piano in the wings with a little tape recorder, eager to speak to the maestro. I made the mistake of just moving what I thought was a stage prop. It actually was a little suitcase that was balanced precariously on the lid of the piano, and I just moved it out of the way, and much to Brian's disgust, he said, don't move that, he said, I just need to get some gout of it. And he opened the lid and took out a bottle of Teacher's whiskey, had a quick swig, and he said, right, young man, what are we going to talk about? And the rest was history as far as I was concerned. Brian, in all the times I knew and worked with him, and I had a great pleasure of presenting him locally in concert and further afield. And he was always reliable, despite the bumbling persona on stage and the clowning around. Make no mistake, he was a musician's musician. Since the news of his sad passing has come out into the public arena, there have been many comments from people far more qualified than I on his musicality. A lot of his professional colleagues and peers have thankfully realised something that I don't always think that Brian himself fully knew, just how good he was. Yes, he had a huge impact on so many people up and down the country, including me, to recreate some of those wonderful orchestral sounds that Brian just seemed to be able to do with aplomb and such ease. He will be one of those troopers who, thankfully, because of the large catalogue of albums that he's left behind, his music will, of course, go on. But as a person, as an individual, yes, Brian Sharp was unique, and he will be missed. I'll miss our little chats, his quirky little ways. But above all, I'm eternally grateful to him for taking the trouble to speak to a very young journalist who wanted to do a little bit for the organ world. And that's exactly what Brian did for me on that very first meeting.
Ian mentioned Brian's bumbling persona and clowning around on stage, and in the course of compiling a video of him, one that regrettably he will never see, I came across just such an example, taken from a live concert he did for me at the BBC Playhouse in Manchester back in 1984. He's about to play an item on the Kawai organ.
Let's do a little bit of triple tonguing with the trumpet. Right, and there's a march tempo. Find it. January, February, March. There it is. Right. Yeah. Okay, that's that, and then that. Here's the comedian's gallop by him that what wrote it. Thank you.
The Comedian's Gallop, taken from a live broadcast that Brian did for me back in 1984 at the BBC Playhouse Theatre in Manchester, in a concert where he played both the Wurlitzer Theatre organ and, as there, the Kawai organ. Now, one person who has memories of working very closely with Brian is former Kawai organ demonstrator Andrew Gilbert.
I had the pleasure of working with Brian Sharp many, many times during the period that we were both working for Kawai organs. And believe me, there are plenty of tales I could probably tell. But perhaps the most important one for me is the occasion I first met him. It was on a very, very cold, windy, rainy February morning in 1971. And he was doing a Gulbranson demonstration in Worthing for the local dealer, featuring a brand new model called the Theatrum. I'd heard Brian play on the radio and I'd nagged my parents to let me come along and listen to him live, even though it was a school night, you know, and I had to be up at 6:30 the following morning. And they eventually let me and they took me along. And it was an absolutely brilliant show. And I think somewhere in my archives I've still got the cassette recording of Brian playing that night. Now, as usual, at the end of the evening, the dealer invited people up to come and try the organs, and my dad pushed me right to the front of the queue. And he spoke to Peter Butler, one of the directors of the company that imported Gulbranson, and told him that we had a Gulbranson at home, that I was playing a big Gulbranson at a hotel every week. And he sat me right down at the Theatrum and said, "Go on, play some tunes." Well, I can't remember everything I played, but I did finish up with a tune called Aquarius from the musical Hair. Now, this brought Brian out from the bar, drinks in hand, along with Arthur Butler, who was the managing director of the company. And Brian's words are still etched in my memory 45 years later. "Who's playing that organ? He's playing one of my tunes." Now, he came across and listened for a bit, and then he said, "Well, have a look at this, have a listen to this." And he sat down and he showed me some of the bits and pieces that he put in his arrangement, which wasn't a million miles away from the arrangement that I just played for him. And we sat down and we chatted for a few minutes. He asked me how long I'd been playing, how old I was. And I can remember being really, really impressed that someone of Brian's stature would sort of spend time talking to a young lad that he'd never, ever seen before. He told me very kindly that he was impressed with my playing. And he said to Peter and Arthur, "You should keep an eye on this lad for the future." Well, I'm pleased to say that they did, and I'm sure that in no small way, that evening was one of the reasons that Peter and Arthur asked me to join Kawai 6 years later. And I shall always be very grateful to Brian for doing that.
Around that time, organs featured in the life of a young Andrew Varley, who recalls, "When I first started playing the organ in the early 70s, I heard Brian in concert with my parents. In those days, it was the Gulbranson and the Kawai organs. He was a major influence in inspiring me to play. There was no other player quite like him, and his concerts were always fresh and exciting, always using different extras to the main instrument he was playing at the time. I'll never forget the crash cymbal, what seemed to be a homemade percussion box, and introducing us to Dame Synthesizer. I have many wonderful memories of Brian. Thank you. Rest in peace." Two of our leading lady organists also have memories of Brian that they wanted to include. Penny Whedon tells the story of her first trip out on her own when she'd learnt to drive and she went to a nearby shopping centre. "I parked up and idly wandered into Ellis John's music shop. There I found a man playing an eminent prototype organ built into a Perspex case. I must explain that I was new to the electronic organ world then and didn't even know who anyone was. As glorious orchestral sounds poured forth, I asked the shop manager who the player was. 'That's Brian Sharp,' he said proudly. I said, 'He's brilliant, isn't he? He really ought to take it up professionally.' The chance came to finally own up to my stupidity many years later when I was comparing for Brian at a festival. I told him the story and we had a good laugh about it, and I was able to tell him that I actually bought the prototype organ that he'd been demonstrating and took up electronic organ playing, thanks to his demo. Then Jean Martin sent an email, and it reads, Brian was a very talented musician, way before his time, especially during the early days on the Reha Orchestra. I remember with great fondness his enormous selection of cables for additional keyboards, his glasses falling off between the pedals of the Tower Wurlitzer in a concert, the numerous laughs over a few whiskies, a bottle or two, but generally speaking, a lovely man who lived for his music. That, to me, was Brian. And that, to me, seems a good time in this tribute to include one of his only recordings made on the Blackpool Tower Wurlitzer with a tune that he later had a very famous connection with. Calling all workers and that connection that he had with the tune? Well, when the BBC resurrected for a short period of time the daily programme Music While You Work, Brian did a complete edition of the show all on keyboards. But he was no stranger to broadcasting for the BBC, as Harold Rich, a well-known pianist and composer, recalls in his letter to me. Apart from expressing my great sadness at Brian's passing, which I hope you'll convey to your listeners, I can only say what a pleasure it was to work with such a fine musician. When Brian was a child, he was asked what he wanted to be when he grew up, and he replied, "I want to be an orchestra." His wish was certainly granted in 1983 when he and I shared a 3.5-hour concert on the stage of the Fairfield Hall in Croydon. the highlight of which was a performance of the first movement of Grieg's Piano Concerto. I was the solo pianist, and Brian was the orchestra. The compere, incidentally, was Pete Murray. Brian and I go back to our early days in music, though it wasn't until the late 50s when I joined him at La Reserve nightclub in Sutton Coalfield that we first broadcast together. It was in 1964 when I changed my quartet from piano, guitar, bass and drums to piano, Hammond organ, bass and drums. It was a broadcasting quartet only, and I well remember the Birmingham BBC not being happy at the idea of organ instead of guitar, saying that as a group bore my name, I'd be swamped, as they said, by the organ. Needless to say, their fears were quite groundless. Apart from broadcast together in the quartet, Brian used to invite me to be his guest at the end of organ weeks at various venues at holiday camps such as Caister, and I can truthfully say that some of my most enjoyable and fruitful times in music were sharing the stage with Brian and, of course, on radio. Organist Brian Hazelby followed Brian at La Reserve nightclub, and he too remembers the organ festival days and writes, "While I was in Bermuda working for Giraldo, I heard that Brian was leaving to do demos, and as my contract was coming to an end, I made inquiries and secured the residency as musical director for the next 12 years, and then also recorded for Grosvenor Records. I recall in the early days of organ festivals, a meeting was held with many players on the stage. Somebody asked for Sweet Georgia Brown, so Brian and I played an instant duet with no rehearsal. That was fine, however. I played it in the key of A flat, starting chord F7, and Brian played it in G, starting chord E7. Too late for any changes, so we continued to the end, and it must have sounded like a Schoenberg composition." As most of us know, Brian was the resident organist for over a decade at the Sanford Park Holiday Venue in Dorset, where there was a Christie pipe organ installed. He wasted no time in having it customised so that he could incorporate all his electronic keyboards, a combination that made for very enjoyable listening, as on this selection of four tunes made famous by Deanna Durbin, a track taken from Sharp's The Word. Thank you. A Deanna Durbin medley played there by Brian Sharp on the Christie organ that used to be in the Sanford Park holiday venue in Dorset. Once again, Howard Beaumont, who this year is celebrating 50 years as a professional organist, has memories of Brian. He writes, "Brian was another hero of mine. When I started working as a demonstrator, I was thrown in at the deep end doing a show with him in Lancashire. He was playing the Reha Orchestra organ and made it sound just like that. His approach was totally different to anything I've heard played on an electronic organ. We became friends after that. He respected my choice of music and I his. And whenever we played together, we seemed to gel as one. Another master of the craft has left us." Back in the 80s, I was connected with the Spring in Spain organ festivals ran jointly between Pontins Holidays and the newly formed Association of Organ Enthusiasts. Brian was one of many organists invited to appear there, and late down one morning and having missed breakfast, he revealed that he'd just done himself a boiled egg in his room. Well, the rooms had no cooking facilities that we knew of, but it transpired that he'd packed a whole carton of fresh eggs in his luggage, which then went into the airplane hold. They survived the flight intact, and he simply put an egg each morning into the bedroom tea-making kettle until it was done to his liking. Memories for me at least of those amazing Spring in Spain organ festivals, and that was Spanish Harlequin, played by Brian on his Orlitzer and taken from what I think might be one of the last two recordings he ever made. Brian was equally at home on theatre organ as he was on whatever electronic organ or keyboard he sat at, and so when a few years ago the Roland Phantom XR theatre organ in a box attachment became available, he attached it to an Orla GT9000 and toured the festival and concert circuit with his Orlitzer. Talking of Orla instruments, here's someone who knows that range of instruments backwards. Mike Hall.
His approach to playing organs, particularly in the orchestral way, was such an inspiration to me and to so many other players of today. He just had a completely different idea. He came in a different pathway to virtually everybody else. When you listen to him on pipe organs, and I remember going to pipe organ shows from the 70s onwards, and what he could do with a pipe organ was just fantastic, in the same way that he did on electronics. One number I particularly remember with Brian, that back in about 73, 74, I remember him playing that good old Antonio Carlos Jobim number, Wave. And at that time, not many people were playing it. Brian was. And I can remember him playing that at a live demonstration show all those years ago, about 74, I think it was. What a sound. Just unbelievable. The number of times that we've met up, even just fairly in the last few years, he's still got that humour, but above all, the most incredible musicianship, and to be such an inspiration to so many people is just, I think, just fantastic. You know, it was a very, very sad time when I heard from a colleague of mine in the music world who told me the incredibly sad news about the passing of Brian Sharp. difficult to come to terms with, but for me, Brian Sharp was just probably the ultimate.
Mike Hall and memories of Brian Sharp playing Wave. Well, Brian, like Mike Hall and several other organists, had periods in their organ world careers playing for any number of the organ manufacturers in days gone by. One such organist with the prestigious Hammond Organ Company was Keith Beckingham, and he emailed to say, I first met Brian when we appeared together in a Hammond extravaganza at Birmingham Town Hall. Ina Barger was also on the bill. Brian, who was then playing at a local night spot, was making his first concert appearance, and I recall him opening with Leroy Anderson's Bell of the Ball. The audience of nearly 3,000, including many of his local supporters, loved it. His playing ability was immediately obvious, and he was destined to make a big name for himself in the organ world. We met many times at music trade events and organ festivals, and he was always good company. Such was his musicianship and creativity that he always wanted more from an organ, hence his love of add-on black boxes that took hours to set up. The last time we spoke, he had got ideas to get all us old-timers together, myself included, for a weekend festival. Sadly, the idea came to nothing. He'll be greatly missed by all of us in the profession and by his numerous fans. Well, I've purposely left until the final moments of this special, albeit both sad and celebratory programme this month, to a father and son whose surname is synonymous with the electronic organ festival scene. If it hadn't been for Clegg Griffin and his approach to the Pontins Holiday Group back in the 80s, I have to ask myself, would there have been anyone else with the foresight and enthusiasm to take it to where it is today? Having now been retired for a number of years, Clegg Griffin nevertheless sent this email. I was very proud to have both Brian Sharp and Alan Haven as star players at many of the keyboard festivals I produced between 1980 and 2010. The Pontins Tower Beach festivals at Prestatyn in 81 and 82 stands out in my memory when Brian Sharp entertained around 2,000 enthusiasts, and when, in 1983, Alan Haven entertained a record crowd at Pontins Hemsby. But perhaps most memorable of all was the appearance of both players at the Pontins Spring in Spain festivals in 1984. Both players will be remembered for the immense pleasure they gave to others. And the final word in this programme is from Cled's son, Ian Griffin.
It is, no doubt, a very sad time for us all, for those of us who knew Brian, to learn that we've just lost an icon, if you like, in the organ and keyboard world. He was no doubt the inspiration for many players, including myself, with his incredible orchestral playing and arrangements. I first heard Brian way back in 1974. I was only young then and just starting off my career, and I was just simply spellbound by his sparkling performance. Brian, over the years, of course, has recorded many albums on vinyls, cassettes, and of course CDs. And I've chosen a piece of music which shows his expression and feeling that he always put into his music. A piece of music called Somewhere in Time from the film of the same name. I've got many, many happy memories, not only listening to him, but I've been very privileged to share the stage with him on many, many shows in the UK and in Spain. So sit back and have a listen and reminisce to the wonderful music that Mr. Brian Sharp has given us over the years. His music, I'm sure, well, I know, will be here forever. Thank you.
Brian Sharp and Alan Haven. Thanks, guys. Your music will live on forever.
You've been listening to Organ First Radio, a Penelador production presented by Alan Ashton with technical direction by Ian King.